that it might be freed from the encumbrance of associations and interruptions with which it had no kind of concern, I caused the few sheets of Master Humphrey's clock, which had been printed in connection with it, to be cancelled, and like the unfinished tale of the windy night and the notary in The Sentimental Journey, they became the property of the trunk maker and butterman. I was especially unwilling, I confess, to enrich those respectable trades with the opening paper of the abandoned design in which Master Humphrey's clock described himself and his manner of life. Though I now affect to make the confession philosophically, as referring to a bygone emotion, I am conscious that my pen winces a little even while I write these words. But it was done, and wisely done, and Master Humphrey's clock, as originally constructed, became one of the lost books of the earth, which, we all know, are far more precious than any that can be read for love or money. In reference to the tale itself, I desire to say very little here. The many friends it has won me, and the many hearts it has turned to me when they have been full of private sorrow, invest it with an interest, in my mind, which is not a public one, and the rightful place of which appears to be a more removed ground. I will merely observe, therefore, that in writing the book, I had it always in my fancy to surround the lonely figure of the child with grotesque and wild, but not impossible, companions, and to gather about her innocent face and pure intentions associates as strange and uncongenial as the grim objects that are about her bed when her history is first foreshadowed. Master Humphrey, before his devotion to the trunk and butter business, was originally supposed to be the narrator of the story. As it was constructed from the beginning, however, with a view to separate publication when completed, his demise has not involved the necessity of any alteration. I have a mournful pride in one recollection associated with little Nell. While she was yet upon her wanderings, not then concluded, there appeared in a literary journal an essay of which she was the principal theme, so earnestly, so eloquently and tenderly appreciative of her and of all her shadowy kith and kin, that it would have been insensibility in me if I could have read it without an unusual glow of pleasure and encouragement. Long afterwards, and when I had come to know him well, and to see him, stout of heart, going slowly down into his grave, I knew the writer of that essay to be Thomas Hood. London, September 1848. Chapter 1. Although I am an old man, night is generally my time for walking. In the summer, I often leave home early in the morning and roam about fields and lanes all day, or even escape for days or weeks together. But saving in the country, I seldom go out until after dark, though, heaven be thanked, I love its light and feel the cheerfulness it sheds upon the earth as much as any creature living. I have fallen insensibly into this habit, both because it favours my infirmity and because it affords me greater opportunity of speculating on the characters and occupations of those who fill the streets. The glare and hurry of broad noon are not adapted to idle pursuits like mine. A glimpse of passing faces, caught by the light of a street lamp or a shop window, is often better for my purpose than their full revelation in the daylight. And, if I must add the truth, night is kinder in this respect than day, which too often destroys an air-built castle at the moment of its completion, without the least ceremony or remorse. That constant pacing to and fro, that never-ending restlessness, that incessant tread of feet wearing the rough stones smooth and glossy, is it not a wonder how the dwellers in narrow ways can bear to hear it? Think of a sick man in such a place as St. Martin's Court, listening to the footsteps, and in the midst of pain and weariness, obliged, despite himself, as though it were a